minute, Crossfade.
The Daily Talk Show.
A conversation sometimes worth recording with Josh Jensen and Tommy Jacket.
The Daily Talk Show. We've got Mark Ferguson, also known as Cycling Maven.
To be honest, I thought it was your real name. I thought Cycling Maven, you changed your name to that?
I get called Maven a lot.
Do you?
So I'm thinking about changing my name by default to Maven, just Maven. Like Prince.
How did you come up with Cycling Maven?
Well, back in the day, I was thinking, okay, how can I get online and do this, share some thoughts on cycling? And a Maven is a expert in a particular field who seeks to pass on knowledge to others.
Really?
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
It's Yiddish. I'm not Jewish, but
yeah,
just thought I'd tell you that.
Well, it's pretty straightforward. You're talking about cycling. You've got your YouTube channel.
Yeah.
Is that where it started? Is that the platform you chose?
I actually started in the late 2000s, and I started up a blog, and then I realised I was a really crap writer.
I've got a mate of mine, great designer, shit writer, had a blog, and it was just like... It looked so nice. He had the best designed website. It would make me really upset when you actually read the stuff because it wouldn't make sense. So you did a bit of that.
I had people just emailing me about spelling mistakes and just people just froth on telling you that you've done something
good
wrong.
Good engagement. Yeah. Good engagement. You know?
So that was it. So that died a miserable death. And in fact, that went well for about 6 months, and then I got a real job.
Wait, were you doing it as an actual thing? That was your job?
Yeah, well, I moved from Perth, right, to Melbourne in the global financial crisis right at 2008, and I had no job to come to, and I wanted to move to Melbourne, right? So I thought, okay, I'm going to get a job when I'm here.
Why do you want to move to Melbourne?
Just because I was single, it's just cool, they have really good coffee.
Is that really the thing? So, like, if you're single, Melbourne is good?
Yeah. Back then, yeah. And I think it still is. I mean, I'm not single anymore, so I wouldn't know.
Well, you moved here, you had some success. Just to reset a bit, we are in a little, almost like a bungalow-esque of a cafe.
Yeah, we've got some background music. Mm.
Yeah, so if you're hearing those funky vibes.
What was it? You thought it was called Lost on Chapel?
It was called Lost on Chapel, and I've been here 5,000 times. It's actually called Found on Chapel.
Found on Chapel.
So come down, check it out if you live in Melbourne.
Yeah, great coffee. Enjoying a flat white.
It's a cool little place. In South Melbourne, not South Melbourne.
South Yarra.
And so you're now living in Melbourne. Yep. You've got your YouTube channel boasting 45K subs. Do you swing
Tommy's
that?
Tommy's a sub counter. If you haven't heard every.
Well, do you count your subs? I mean,
back in the day, back pre 1,000.
Yeah,
like I'd set notifications up. And like,
did you?
Bill Jones just subscribed to your channel. And I'd be like, sick.
Click on Bill.
Awesome. Click on Bill, up. Check him out, see if he's got anything going.
And wait, so the blog, so sorry I interrupted you. You moved from Perth to Melbourne because of coffee and you were single.
Yeah. And just to get a better life, really, because Perth's great. Don't get me wrong. Anyone from Perth listening, love you.
Yeah.
But great weather. Yeah. Right, but job prospects and stuff like that is just way better for what I do.
So you grew up in WA then?
Grew up in WA.
Okay.
Yeah, started cycling over there. Mm-hmm. Anyway, moved to Melbourne, did the blog for 6 months in cycling, so commentating on cycling, and then realised, you know what, you've actually got to pay the bills.
Mm. And I can't spell.
And I can't spell to save my life. And I didn't finish high school, so.
Tommy and you have another thing in common.
We're similar, but I don't cycle.
Yeah.
And I don't have 45,000 subs. I've got 943.
Don't be so hard on yourself. So did you already have a community at that point or no?
Sort of through the blog, I actually did build a bit of a community, but got a job and then just let it go. Got back into the surgical device world. And, you know, the reality of just slogging it out and focusing on that, it just went by the wayside.
So you said you got back into it. So what did you do when you finished school? So you dropped out?
Yeah, so I dropped out year 10, actually. I wagged so many days of year 10 that my dad said, you've got to join the Navy or the Army or the Air Force. And so I said, Navy.
Not even just like, because some people, like Tommy became a landscaper, there was other options.
Yeah.
So you joined the Navy?
Joined the Navy. I was just almost 16.
Did you ever get motion sick before then? Like,
no,
that wasn't an issue?
No.
Okay.
Well, see, this is an interesting question because I'd surfed for like 4 years before I went to the Navy. So you'd think I'd be a shoo-in. But as it turned out, I got hella sick.
Really?
Oh, mate, I had days. Like, I'm not joking. Seasickness is the worst feeling. Mm. I don't know if you boys
I vomited seasick. All the way to Tasmania once, yeah.
And that's
I
a big ship.
Yeah, and they said... And I was 17 and Mum said, well, I think you just need some food. So for some reason, we thought it was a good idea to eat a cheese Kransky. I just vomited harder.
I've got the buffet on the Spirit of Tasmania.
It's disgusting. Absolutely disgusting. So you started off by vomiting on the Navy.
Yeah. So I went on a few ships, right? Mm. But they're quite narrow, the ships. They're not like the Spirit of Tasmania. It's a big fat chunk of hunk in the ocean.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We've got these narrow sort of Navy ships and they're long, so they roll. Anyway, first few sessions out, the first day is the worst, right? And you've got to work. Like, I'm there to work and sort of paint things and fix things and stuff. You can't. When you got seasick, you're just lying down on the ground, just throwing up. And that goes on when you go to sea, out in the ocean for 2 weeks, 3 weeks at a time, for days.
Oh,
so think
no.
about that for 4 days.
I felt horrendous coming here because I tried to watch your YouTube videos while Tommy was driving and nearly vomited. I've still got that throat feeling.
And you've smashed your coffee.
Yeah, I did. Is that a bad idea?
Well, if you're feeling
a lot of dairy. And I normally drink almond milk, but I didn't want to sort of, because of the friction of already recording, I didn't want to rock up late, get a specific room and ask for almond milk. The almond milk felt like it was too much.
It was just too much to compute, wasn't it?
So now I'm going to shit my pants before the end of the episode, but it'll be worth it.
So you mentioned you work in the surgical instruments sales. Is that what you said?
Surgical devices, yeah.
So you have your YouTube channel. And I see everyone out there, everyone's trying to go, I want that to be my job. I want the YouTube. And I think some people look from the outside and look at your channel, 45K subs. Oh, there's your job. There's what's going to pay the bill.
He's a bloody billionaire.
Do you know, it's funny, the perception. So a lot of people think that, I've bloody made it. You know, I've got 45K subs.
Well, you have. You're on the Daily Talk Show.
You've arrived.
Stoked to be
here.
Thanks. People think, oh, God, you're doing so well. But the truth is on YouTube, and you've got a YouTube channel yourself, Tommy, but it's a slog. And if you've monetized, you don't make much money. You know, like I reckon, and I don't mind sharing this.
I've made $1 billion.
I make about $300 a month.
Wow. Yeah.
Okay. From the advertising.
It's not even paying for your Gazman.
My Gazman t-shirt. I'm just rocking this Gazman t-shirt now. The boys are taking the mickey out of me.
No, you were just talking before you spent big on Gazman.
The bloke without a kid is taking the mickey out of you. I saw it and thought, that's fashion.
No, it is
that's
really.
Fashion. As
yeah,
a dad.
Gazman.
No, it looks really nice. It almost looks like the sort of dry wicking, sort of the stuff that Tim Ferriss is always pushing, you know, the things that you don't have to ever wash.
And you can put it under the sink and then wring it out in your hotel room.
Yeah, that type of thing.
Or you can just be a normal human.
So you're trying to tell us that you can't be, you're not rich from YouTube.
You just don't make a living. And I tried to do that. I mean, I quit quit my day job in March 2017. Went and did the Indy Pack, which I can tell you a little bit about later. But it's a race basically across from Perth to Sydney by bike as fast as you can. Through the centre, yeah.
Whoa.
From Perth, across the Nullarbor, down through Melbourne, up through the Victorian Alps. And you've got to carry all your own stuff on your bike. But anyway, long story, but made it most of the way. And then went overseas and really tried to have a crack at this YouTube channel thing. It's just a tough gig to make money because you've got to touch up brands and stuff to get any sort of income.
Yeah. You said you went overseas?
Yeah, so bit of a story here. Had a did a Kickstarter. So after the Indy Pack, I got back and thought, okay, what can we do now?
Yeah.
And as we know in cycling, the big races are the Tour de France, the Giro d'Italia, which is the Italian version, and then you've got the Vuelta a España, which is the Spanish version.
Mm-hmm.
And I said to my followers on YouTube, I said, look, I'll do a Kickstarter. You guys pay. And I'll go over and do a series of vlogs from these grand tours and tell you guys how awesome they are and where to go and where to stay. And to my surprise, I put up like 10 grand as the thing that I thought I was going to hit.
Yeah.
50 grand in
no
three
way.
Days they chipped in.
Over 3 days?
Well, within 3 or 4 days, we had something like 40 grand. and then over the next the course of the next 60 days, I think you leave a Kickstarter open for.
Yeah.
Got me up to 50K.
And so you're a billionaire pretty much.
No, no. Well, the funny thing, like, because it was their insecurities of doing it, because you see the people who are like, you know, can't afford a honeymoon, so here's a GoFundMe page so we can go on a nice holiday. You get people who are pretty...
Are you saying they're gross, self-indulgent ones, and then there's other ones that actually offer value?
People who have no self-awareness at all and don't realise what it was. So what were the? How did you reconcile it in your mind to feel like you weren't just taking the piss?
This is a really good question, and this was something that came back to bite me, right? Mm. Because what I did was I offered a certain amount of things, you know, caps, t-shirts, which we all fulfilled, and. It was, I will bring you guys a video every day from the Grand Tours, you know, of our vlog. It's just a vlog, plus a few other bits and pieces. I can't remember, you know, hats and t-shirts and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So it was about adding value. And really, at the end of the day, if you don't want to put money in towards a Kickstarter, you're not going to pull your wallet out.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So if you're frothing on what I'm doing, you're going to put some money in.
So you maybe over-engineered it. You gave too much.
I gave too much. Well... Mm-hmm. We did over-engineer. So it's that balance, right? Mm-hmm. So people that are seasoned vets, I know you spoke to Rob Ward a few sessions ago and podcasts ago, and he did a great Kickstarter for his business.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, you can underdo it, like these people that you were saying, and you can overdo it and by offering too much stuff, because when you get back, you've got to fulfill all these orders, and it's hard yards, man.
So what was that like? What was the story behind that? What's the learning?
Well, the learning was that we went over there, and a lot of the crew that were watching my channel, and we had a whole bunch, because SBS don't cover the Giro d'Italia. So that was the first race we went to, the Italian version. Yeah, And SBS weren't covering it. So we had all these people coming to my channel to watch the race. Mm-hmm. Well, it turns out that you need media rights. It costs thousands of dollars media rights.
Yeah, of course.
Right? You can't just vlog it.
So you can't just vlog. I can't point a camera at the riders. Yeah. Go, this is sweet. Let's just... So I had to film myself and Hannah and us just hanging out.
He's a reenactment.
This is the equivalent of, like, not Optus not live streaming, but then it's like Optus streaming the World Cup, but instead of having the game, they've just got a couple of guys just sitting there. What it turns into Gogglebox.
Just talking about it. It was Gogglebox. This is exactly what it was. So we had a lot of flack in the first few vlogs, like a lot of kickback from our followers, and not so much even my followers. My followers were like, we know what you do, bro. It's cool.
Yeah.
But these douchebags coming in thinking that they're going to watch the Giro d'Italia because SBS aren't televising it.
Yeah.
And so that just threw me into a flat spin, right? It rattled me hard. You know, we had troll comments. Like, I don't even know if I can say some of the comments on here.
You can. Say a good one.
Well, one of the comments was Hannah needs a cock in her ass, and that was the top voted comment. Now, for those of you who don't know, Hannah's my partner. Yeah.
Now, baby mama.
Yeah. One day, she's my mama.
Oh, she's the baby mama.
She's my baby mama. Yeah, I've got a 4-month-old little boy. So.
Right, and so I mean that tells you a lot about the community that you're creating there.
It was the top voted comment. Yeah, that's what cracked me.
Well, that's what I was saying.
I deleted it.
I was saying to Tommy. I was saying the thing that I like about what we're doing is we don't want to go too far out of our frequency. We don't want to go to those people, like, because those people are there. So I guess the more viral you go, the more sort of open you are to people criticizing you. Have you found that you've got that core community, and do you avoid, like, do you see the negative side of going viral or going too big?
I think viral, I'm not going to say it doesn't work for a start, but just talking about viral, I think, you know, you can have a viral video and pick up no extra subscribers.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I don't think aiming to be viral is the main thing, but it's organic growth.
Yeah.
Exactly what you're doing, exactly what I've done. Yes, as you grow, you cop more criticism, and you're really opening yourself up to criticism. And I think in video, particularly on YouTube, because we know YouTube's a place where trolls can sort of open up any account under any name, and you can open up an account under my name and start trolling other people and pretend as though you're me.
Yeah.
Don't do it.
Yeah,
but
not
you
ideal.
Can do that.
Yeah. Yeah, interesting.
You've been doing that for ages. Every time.
That's me. I was the one saying the thing in the bum.
Wow.
I don't even want to say that comment again.
I mean, it's annoying because I think what it points out to is that it is that sort of the sexism of it, which is like pointing out Hannah, like making it about her when she's just like sort of this small part of the whole piece. Do you find that? Do you find that bringing in certain people into your world that they get criticised more than even you do?
Not really. I mean, Hannah's pretty well liked on the channel. We both are, obviously, but I think with the Kickstarter, as soon as you bring money into it, and as soon as people can see that you're hitting your straps and you're having success, then that's when a lot of jealousy comes in.
Yeah,
and so then people get feisty.
Man, I think you can almost bring more value when it's not when you're not being paid for it, because you can almost try in different areas that are a bit dangerous and you might win. So you might be a bit more creative.
But then how do you do it? That's the conundrum, right?
You're not getting paid for it. Yeah, but then the conundrum is...
You're not getting paid for it, so it's not a... It's hard to make a living. And then the other side of it is it's like you're sort of fucked either way, because you either... You do that, you ask people for money and then they feel like a real ownership, or you go to brands and try and convince them that whatever tone of voice that you want to do or the way that you want to, you know, showcase their product is the right way.
That's exactly right. And that were the two options. I mean, we really didn't have a lot of time after the indie pack. So the indie pack took me, was supposed to take, you know, 4 to 6 weeks, and we had headwinds pretty much every day in the first few days. So it put us behind schedule. So we only had 3 weeks to sort of muster up some money to go to the Giro d'Italia. And so I didn't have a lot of time to approach brands. So I thought the best way to do this is the Kickstarter. In retrospect, it wasn't the best way to do it. I would advise anyone thinking about doing this to go to brands. Because as you just said, the people think that they've got ownership of the vlog. And so once you're a Kickstarter contributor, you have, you know, production rights to, you know, oh, we want to see more of this. And so we found that people were doing that more and more. But the worst thing was, is because we were making these videos on YouTube from the Kickstarter funding, there were people that hadn't contributed to the Kickstarter who are also saying, we want this, 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 and this.
It's so dodgy.
I mean, I'm a video guy, so is Josh. That's our craft. Are you? What are you? I mean...
Good question, man. I don't even know what I'm doing. I've done 600 videos.
How many videos?
No, I've done 600 videos now, but I always just had a bit of a thing for video. I never knew anything, and I got on lynda.com, and this was in 2014. I got on lynda.com, and I did a Premiere Pro CC course.
You need to do that one. Tommy's going to be transitioning from
Final Cut Pro to Premiere Pro.
Lynda.com is great.
It's fantastic. I highly recommend. This is not an advertisement.
Yeah, it fucking should be.
It should be, though. We're going to get in touch with it.
So you did that whole Lynda.com, learnt Premiere. And what was your first video?
I started doing GoPro. So the whole premise behind going from the blog was knowing that I couldn't write. I wasn't a good writer. So then I went into making videos and I thought, I've got a bit of a creative flair. I'll start making videos. I found Casey Neistat. I don't know if anyone knows, but he's a vlogger, a vlogger on YouTube. I don't know what's a vlogger or vlogger.
I've never heard if you're asking grandpa or your cousin.
Funny thing is, like, I've heard vlog twice in the last 2 days.
I call it vlogger.
Yeah,
it's a blogger.
Yeah,
but then you sound like a flogger.
Yeah.
Well, it's not B-log.
No, well, as a blog. No, but I did have someone say, Josh, when you're traveling, you should...
V-log.
You should do a V-log. And it was hard for me not because she was being super, super nice, but I wanted to, like, laugh in that moment because it's quite a... maybe I will do a V-log. But anyway, so you... You did the whole GoPro thing. You bought it. That's a classic thing. I remember going to Fiji a few years ago, and GoPro seemed to be the gateway drug in a lot of ways to content creation.
Yeah, well, GoPros back when I started were huge, right? So any GoPro footage was just off the chart, and especially to put it on a bike and race, and I was pretty fit back then, right? So I won a couple of races with the GoPro on the front of my bike, and so I was pretty stoked to cut this up and put it on YouTube. So I thought, okay, how can I put this on YouTube without looking like a total wanker, because I'd won the race. So I thought, okay, I'll do a tutorial and I'll narrate the footage and I make it a how-to, right? So I made this how-to video on how to win a race, right? And I didn't even know what I was talking about, but I was just talking. And anyway, it had like 16,000 views, this GoPro video. And I thought, I'm really starting to enjoy this YouTube stuff, you know?
I'm super naive when it comes to cycling, but I've seen Icarus. So I can't help but think that anyone that's winning a race is obviously like you've got a full medical team working on you and stuff like that. Is that the reality within an amateur? Like, what level were you playing in?
Oh, well, I was only racing local club crits. So, you know, like a criterion for those that don't know is just it's a lap. You go for like a 1 kilometer circuit, usually a flat course, and you do it about 50 times. And you race for 50 minutes, and then they ring the bell with 3 laps to go, and you sort of, everyone sort of starts to race, right?
Yeah.
But something like Icarus is, he's going over massive mountains.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so, you know, a lot of those guys are, you know, you're at your threshold over these mountains.
Did you say it's called a crit?
Criteria.
Oh, yeah.
So your races, were they first across the line wins, not time?
Yeah, first across. So you line up with, say, you start the race, the criterium, with, you know, say 100 blokes, 100 people, and then you race around. And I'm a natural born sprinter, so sprinting is my thing. So basically what I do is I wait to the end of the race, they ring the bell with 3 laps to go, and then I go to the front and just
see,
turn
suckers.
It on.
Yeah, great.
That's my thing, right? But there's a lot of guys who are time trialists or hill climbers, and they're quite light, so they're like 60 kilos and they can just go up here. So those guys leave me for dead.
Fire. A few name drops here. Grew up going to primary school and high school. Mark French, a cyclist Australian guy.
Yeah, very good sprinter.
Yeah, very good. His thighs are twice the size of your head, Josh.
Really?
And you've got a big one.
I don't want a name drop. I'm on Strava. I've got Strava. I'm on Strava.
Is this a sponsored ad?
No, this isn't a sponsored ad, but I actually got... It was the saddest thing of... You know, the Strava review, the year in review? It's normally pretty exciting. Mine had, I think it was like 14 kilometres as my year in review. But the big lesson with Strava and what I've since learned, I actually bought... Hamish Blake, who I've had on the podcast, he had a spare bike, and I bought the bike off him. It was a cyclocross, and I was just going for it. Was either me getting a Reed bike, right, or Hamish is like, mate, don't do that here, buy this one. So anyway, I bought it, cyclocross it, and I started using Strava, and he texted me and said that I shouldn't be putting up my one, because I was going riding to work, which was, I think, 1.2 kilometres. And so that's what I was putting on Strava. But what I learned was, Haim was explaining that there's all these rules. He noticed that all these people are looking at things, and that they're looking at your socks. They're looking at, like, there's all these... There's a whole culture around what you wear.
Oh, look, road cyclists are bloody wankers, really. But no, I'm only kidding. I'm joking.
He's calling himself one.
So are you a road cyclist? Like,
I would say I'm a road cyclist.
Do you identify as a road cyclist?
I identify as a road cyclist. But, you know, I like all types of cycling, really. And that's the premise of my channel. I've done a bit of mountain biking. Crashed every time I went out mountain biking, mind you. Did a little bit of cyclocross. Mm-hmm. I haven't raced cyclocross, though. I want to try that out. Yeah. That's pretty cool. It's in the mud.
I saw a video that you'd done where I think people were... like going over hay bales, or like they were just sort of carrying over.
That's cyclocross.
It seemed pretty slow.
Yeah. It looks slow, but you know what? Like when you're rolling on the road, it's happy days. You can just, you know, push the pedals a little bit and you're rolling. On the grass, you've got to push down 220 watts just to get anywhere.
Yeah.
So, you know, you're pushing hard. So it's a lot harder. And this is the funny thing about cycling, right? Anyone who's watched a cycling race online, you know, you look at the dudes and you know, Chris Froome and all those guys, and they're like, fuck, I could smash these guys, right? Yeah. But the truth is they are pushing 500-600 watts. The whole premise behind them not pulling, you know, wretched heads, you know, exercise heads, is they're trying to look fresh for their opponents. It's part of the strategy, yeah.
It's a world, the cycling world. What's the appeal? I mean...
It's the Lycra.
It is, yeah.
And shaven legs.
I can't see your legs.
My missus loves shaving. Oh, they're not shaven. I haven't ridden a bike for
but what is the appeal? What's the, I guess, that holds the community together and just...
In all seriousness, it's a great... Exercise, as we know, is a great mental health thing, right? So, and cycling is, you know, riding side by side next to a couple of mates. And, you know, it's not that... For example, you and I are sitting here face to face at the moment. It's harder to sort of open up over a coffee.
Yeah.
Whereas on the bike, you're next to your mate. You can talk about anything.
Yeah. We should start doing the podcast off a bike. I just don't know how I would go. Yeah. So the when it comes to the whole fashion type of thing, I fell into the trap of, I'm like, okay, well, if I've got the bike, I need the gear. So I went and did like a Rafa purchase and bought sort of...
Went Rafa.
And so...
Top how many times have you heard this? The guy who gets the bike and goes and buys everything and then doesn't use it.
Hey,
doesn't
we haven't it. Heard the end of the story yet. Maybe I wrote
spoiler
here.
Alert, he doesn't ride. But he did an Instagram post of him in his Lycra.
Yeah. That's critical. If you're in the kit, you got to do at least one Instagram post. Yeah.
But did you get a sense, Josh, of that, oh, I can see the appeal here?
Absolutely. I thought that I was getting into the community. I just didn't... All the haters were saying, Josh, this isn't going to last. This is, you're just buying shit like you normally do. You're not going to do this thing. But I went on a couple of rides and I was living in Abbotsford on the water. So it was like perfect.
Great
location for cycling. But I just don't... it's not that I don't trust cars and stuff. I don't trust myself. Like when I would turn my head, I'd turn the whole bike and stuff like that. So it's from a safety point of view, I was
so
just...
So that's what squashed it for you?
Yeah, I just felt like... Because and the appeal with Rafa was it was like they've got all these... guarantees where it's like, you know, if you lose weight, you can get like a new pair for like half the price, or if you crash, they'll replace the
what
the
if
gear
you quit, do
so,
they?
Yeah, exactly. It's still, I couldn't bring myself to chuck it out, and because I'd worn it once, it feels like one of those
selling underwear
that you can't sell.
You can't, especially after wearing the Knicks. Come on, I mean, who would even buy a second pair of Knicks?
I'm sure there's a market for it on Gumtree.
I would imagine there would be.
So, can you go? The one thing that I was discovering with myself through this whole journey was that I couldn't. I didn't feel comfortable just wearing normal general public clothes on a bike. I felt like if I was going to go on a short bike, I had to kit up.
Wear the kit, yeah.
Do you have to do that or is there?
No.
Okay.
No, you don't. You know, there's a big shift at the moment with a lot of cyclists who wear kit traditionally, moving towards a more traditional style of clothing. There's a few brands actually starting up, one in Melbourne. Just can't remember the name of it right now, but so what I'm saying is there's a lot of people starting to ride around in casual clothes, right? Now, the kit's great if you're going to be racing or you're going to be doing long rides and stuff like that, but, you know, let's face it, it doesn't look great, especially with a guy, you know, like I'm 44 now.
Yeah.
I don't look good in kit.
But fuck, horrendous. For 40, did you say you're 44?
I'm 44, yeah.
It upsets me so much. Why? With the rig that I have at 27.
Well, you've still got a few years, mate.
How much of it is... So, you were talking before we started on CrossFit. Is that a thing that you do or not?
Yeah, CrossFit. CrossFit for me was just a bit of a rest from cycling. You know, I think in the 2010, I'd been cycling all my life. My dad was a cyclist. He was a hitter. And so, you know, I sort of transitioned from cycling from my dad, but I've been doing it so many years, I needed something else. Mm. And so, I started lifting heavy things, throwing weight around, you know, doing the CrossFit thing.
You have to sort of cycling, CrossFit, you know, it's sort of in line with veganism and stuff like that. I was
vegan for 2 years.
Really?
Yep.
How did that go for you?
It was good. Now, being vegan, let's not say vegan because vegan encompasses a lot of things, right?
Yeah, I'm always trying to catch vegans out.
Did
you eat lollies?
Yeah, I did. Then I mean, I was you're a vegan, but I was a cheegan.
Okay, cheegan.
And I can honestly
cheating
say
vegan.
This. I was a cheating vegan.
Yeah.
But lollies, when you say lollies, that's the gelatin.
Yeah.
That's the gelatin, like the jelly babies. And animal product. You can't eat them. But the thing is with veganism is it encompasses a lot of things. You know, you get rid of your leather shoes and your leather car seats and stuff like that. Like, I didn't worry about that shit, right?
Yeah.
All I cared about was just eating plant-based food.
So it was health-driven?
Yeah, it was health-driven, just to feel good about it, right? But I'm not joking. I was riding 70Ks in the morning, doing 70Ks at night, every day for like months.
What's that in an hour? So how long does it take to do 70Ks?
On a bike, 70Ks, it's a long time. It's, you know, two and a half, three hours.
So nearly 5 or 6 hours a day.
Yeah. I was going hardcore, plus working a full-time job,
and I
felt friggin' amazing. I felt absolutely amazing on a plant-based diet. But the thing is with plant-based diet is you've got to eat a lot of food. So when you decide to go plant-based, you've got to eat massive amounts of fruit and vegetables.
Mm-hmm. I saw one of your videos. You were on a bike for 5.5 hours and you said you ate 5 dates. that's all you ate for the day. It's like, could have eaten a bit more, but geez, those 5 dates.
Yeah, I mean, you can you could get through, like on five, like a date an hour, that's fine, if you're just peddling cruisy. Right?
That sounds so sad.
It is pretty sad. But I wasn't deliberately doing that. I think I just only had 5 dates that I picked up that morning. And I just, that was it. I just grabbed a handful of dates. I was running late.
One of your other videos was about, I think it's one of your most viewed, and everyone loves a good road rage incident. Or something going on. It happened in Brighton, out the front of the Brighton Baths.
Yeah,
was
yeah.
It did involve Shane Warne? Isn't he big on the...
Yeah, no.
He hates cyclists, does he?
Yeah, he, does Beach he? Road, I think he's famous for...
Well, if I, you know, if you play devil's advocate and...
Which Tommy loves to do, by the way.
Just so you know, I'm fine with cyclists. My wife, on the other hand. But, you know, what's the thinking around? Is there us versus them? Do you think that's really prominent?
This is what I was saying. Can I jump in first to preface Tommy's question so he just doesn't sound like a bit of a dickhead?
Playing devil's advocate. Well, I can say what I want.
Tommy's in a four, Tommy's what we've discussed this before. Tommy, you're in a four-wheel drive. You've got someone who's on something that's way lighter, way smaller. It feels like there's already on the roads, there's a power imbalance. I don't think there's ever going to be an issue where the cyclists are somehow going to be endangering...
You
drivers.
Can't say that. It's like saying drivers will never be at fault.
I don't think it's at fault, but I think that there is that level of empathy that you have
there
to have.
There will be a large majority in Australia, in the world, that fucking can't stand cyclists. And what is this, from being, I'm not inside the cycling world, what's the thoughts of inside the cycling world looking out to those people? And I'm not saying I'm one of them. I'm playing devil's advocate over
there's
here.
There's a stigma between the, starting off, it's the Lycra and the shaving of the legs thing. So there's a lot of people there. That sort of cracks people. That puts people on the back foot straight away. And I think that's partially why we're seeing a lot of people sort of move into casual clothing. And I enjoy riding down. I've ridden down here in casual clothes. Mm-hmm. So I'm not in my Lycra right
yeah.
now.
Yeah, got your Gazman?
Got my Gazman t-shirt on.
Or Gazman?
Gazman.
Gazman, sorry.
So, you know, I think that's the number one thing, right? And then you see there's this perception that cyclists take over the road when you see, you know, a whole bunch of cyclists on the road and it's hard to pass them and stuff like that. But there's this arrogance that, you know, drivers, I suppose, look at a group like that as a collective group of people and they're all arrogant. The truth is, if I see some dickhead crash his car on the news, I don't sit there and go, Look at all these dickhead drivers. All of them, all of you, all drivers are dickheads, right? Yeah. Because the truth is, I'm a driver and my mum's a driver, right? And I think the problem with cycling is that some dickhead goes through a red light and every cyclist gets labelled a dickhead based on that.
Well, it's a minority thing, right? Like, I think if you go to the Netherlands, it's probably a different sort of kettle
view
of fish.
On cyclists. The person in that video that I'm talking about, the girl in it said something like, "Oh, well, where's your Reggio?" Which was the silliest.
What does it mean?
Where's your Reggio for your bike?
Oh, Reggio. Okay.
Do you remember?
So Tommy's talking about one of my videos. It was a couple of years ago now.
But it's got one of
my most viewed videos though. But
because everyone loves a good road rage, I said.
We had a car come past really close past us and just carry on like a bit of a dickhead. Anyway, he was a 21-year-old and his missus was 19. They pulled over and it was almost a full-on punch-on.
Yeah.
But the chick was just throwing out some of the most wretched calls, like, "Where's your Reggio?" Like, she was a full bogan. It was just horrendous. And so I caught the whole thing on video. I was just loving it, right? And it turns out it was one of my most viewed videos.
Yeah.
So happy days.
Did you ever hear from them?
No.
Well, the guy was on the phone to the cops, the power's in the driver's hands because all you need to do is turn left and run them over.
Yeah.
You can't do that with a car. You'll bounce off if you're the cyclist.
That's right.
So there is, you know, there's duty of care from the from the cars as well.
Look, it's this that sort of thing, although that's my one video that's had most of the hits. There's not a day that goes by where I don't have some dickhead cutting me off or coming too close or something. But I think at the end of the day, as a cyclist, you've just got to brush it off. It's just no biggie. I mean, you know, classic example is one of my videos where I broke my wrist. We had a Korean driver driving down the opposite side of the road towards us and we're doing 50k an hour towards him. We were lining up for the sprint. So we're doing 55k an hour, almost 60k an hour. And everyone went, "What the fuck?" It was like nighttime. We saw these headlights coming towards us.
That's scary because you'd think, like, you don't think Korean driver, you think someone absolutely off their face.
Off
ready,
their face on ice or something. Yeah. So the whole bunch, there was 50 of us in this bunch, just went left, right, fucking wherever, just to save their ass. Anyway, we ended up clipping wheels and things like that, and people went down. I broke my wrist, got carted off to hospital. And, you know, this sort of thing, I suppose, is it's dangerous out there on the road. You know, I understand when people buy bikes and they don't use them.
Yeah.
You know, it's a dangerous environment. But, again, it comes back to, you know, newbies, like there's so many bunters out there.
Yeah.
There's so many bunters out there. And so part of my videos is I want to educate these crew in how to ride properly and how to stay upright and how to look after yourself.
In all kind of subcultures, it can breed, you know, a certain mindset. Is being in the subculture, is there any kind of negative, vibes flowing around? Is there, maybe protection? Say a newbie comes on, I want to start riding. I want to try and ride down Beach Road, the main cycling road in Melbourne. Is there any...
Is it like surfing? Are there sort of like...
protection? You can't come in our pack?
Yeah. I mean, obviously there is. So Beach Road's a classic for this, right? So newbie rider rocks up strong as an ox. So let's say you, for example, Josh, you're strong. Right?
He's
big, push on pedals.
I'm a sprinter,
big
by the way.
Big sprinter, right? So, you know, Beach Road's a sprinting territory, right? Yeah.
Watermelon glutes.
So you rock up to the bunch ride and you start rolling turns with a group that have got all their kit, they're wearing the same kit.
What does that mean, rolling turns?
So rolling turns...
Going around a corner?
No, rolling turns... I take this for granted that you guys know this stuff, right? So rolling turns is coming to the front, right? Yep. So you get on the front of the bunch into the wind and everyone sits on your wheel.
Okay,
and so you're doing 30% more than everyone else. You're the truck.
Yeah.
And then you pull off. You just wanted me to say you're the big truck.
Yeah.
And then you pull off and you go to the back and you have a rest.
Okay.
Right. And it's 30% easier.
Mm-hmm.
And then you come back to the front. That's rolling turns, right?
Yeah.
So you rock up rolling turns, but there's this whole thing on Beach Road that if you rock up to these groups rolling turns, they're gonna tell you to piss off.
Wait, so no one's allowed to roll turns?
Well, if you're inexperienced and they don't know you, they want you to piss off and sit on the back.
Are you a rolling turns kind of guy? Obviously.
Negative ghost rider. No, I'm definitely not. I'm a sit on the back sort of guy, and then when the sprint comes up, come to the front.
But the
interesting.
So, but the being on the back's the easy bit.
Yeah.
So it's more of an ego thing. If you want to go up front, you're only doing that because you want to show that you're a big truck.
It's a bit of an ego thing, but it's also a fitness thing. So you might rock up and, you know, that's your training session. So you might want to sit on the front, drive it, and just pull the boys along for, you know, 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Into like headwind, just show off a bit. It's a show off thing.
And
come on,
it leads the pack though. So it's setting the direction. If they stuffed up, are they giving the signals to car coming up or
yeah? So this is truck ahead. This is a good point, right? So you're pulling turns, you're starting to fatigue. What happens if you start to fatigue and then you sort of clip? You know, you pull off and you take down the rest of the bunch. You know, so that's the thing.
Take
so this
down
is the
as
surfing,
in they all fall.
They all fall.
Shit.
Yeah, and then that happens, man. It happens all the time, especially on Beach Road.
Tommy actually has a good surfing story. He was he had a drone. What was it? The Mavic.
Mavic Pro.
You're known as quite the drone.
Love a Mavic Pro.
And so Tommy was. Where were you?
I shouldn't say because that's why I got in trouble. But I was flying it down towards the Great Ocean Road.
So it was in Victoria.
Drone,
got the drone out, got some great footage of a swell. Is that what you guys call it, a swell?
Epic set rolling through, ginormous.
Anyway, post the video on Facebook with the location and all that sort of thing. And before you know it, Tommy's got death threats.
Because hounded. You fucked up. This is a form of suicide. You don't know what you've done.
Mate,
local's going to tear you
in.
Let me
tell you something. I went to the exact same spot because I love a drone.
Yeah.
Flew the drone down there. I had a guy come out of the water face to face, almost full on punch on.
Shit.
Was like, you fucking flying drones. You give away our surf spots. Like, no death threats, but was going to try and kick my ass. And he was much bigger than me. And I was like, I'm out of here.
Well, Tommy did leverage it as much as he could, as he always does, and he created a... can we talk about this?
Yeah.
It
hasn't gone through.
Yeah, he created a trailer called Surfy Leaks, which was a series that he wanted to create, which was it a six-part series? What were you pitching?
Yeah, six-part series.
Six-part series.
Anyone out there wants it?
It was
get involved.
Surfy Leaks is what it was called. But Andy, you had some success. Tommy ended up with a letter from the ABC offering a couple of $100,000 if he could get another backer on board.
Bit of funding. The process of getting a TV show up, but it's all around that. See, there's so many of these.
So this is Surfing Leaks.
What specifically was surfing for, the subculture of surfing and that aggression that's within it. Why is it happening? Where is it happening?
Do you know, it's funny you say that because there is, going back to the cycling again, there is so much aggression in cycling. Mm. So this whole beach road thing that I was telling you about, even in racing, and I've been privy to it as well because you've got that adrenaline pumping. You're in the race. You know, people are touching wheels and it's a high anxiety situation. And so you're constantly telling people to fuck off and get fucked and you can piss off. And so this is culture within cycling, same sort of thing with surfing.
Oh, yeah, I think what I sort of, because I thought about this a lot and I was thinking about, you know, where they're at and what they're thinking, and it's beyond the surf location. I was thinking it's the feelings that they get from being in the water. Maybe it's the clarity they get. It's cathartic for them. Is there that sense from cycling? Is it therapeutic?
Even absolutely.
It looks fucking painful.
No, I mean, it's you know, cycling, I think there's a big movement of people who are doing these adventure rides and stuff. And so getting out in the wilderness, you know, really challenging. I mean, you think about the race, the Indy Pack that I did, for example, right? Yeah. You leave Perth, you have no support whatsoever. Everything you take is on that bike. You're allowed to pull into shops on the way and get food, obviously, but that's about it. You're not allowed to even take a Mars bar from someone standing on the side of the road. Right?
Do you have a support? Like
No support.
No drivers or anything? Because that's actually, because it sounds like a great trip, but I wouldn't be, I'd be a support vehicle if they needed it, like a four-wheel drive just sort of running ahead and
it's
stuff.
It's the Nullarbor, it's barren.
It's a barren, scary thing. So you're out there, you've done 3-4 days, you've got saddle sores, you fucking,
what's the
everything's
scary
aching.
Bit? What's the scary bit? The Nullarbor, it's like, it's just that there's nothing there.
It's just that there's nothing there, but it's also, I remember at night time, because it's good to ride at night because there's less wind. Right, so I did a lot of night riding.
Bit cooler.
And I remember my light shining from a helmet on the side of the road, and there was all these mounds on the side of the road. And I was thinking, it's just dirt mounds. It was snakes. They come to the side of the road to keep warm. There was thousands of them. I'm not joking, man. There were so many mounds on the side of the road.
Because where can you go from that? Like you were just... Because you're riding right near there.
You're riding on the side of the road. So they're at like a metre away. Right?
Shit.
So I remember just seeing these snakes, just thinking, fuck, this is scary, man. And I'm telling you get a buildup of anxiety. I remember being on the Nullarbor at one stage, coming across the Nullarbor, and I'd been out there for, 2 weeks by this stage on my own, you know, catching up with people here and there. But, you know, you're out in the Nullarbor. I fucking pulled over, had a sleep, and I remember getting up, waking up. It was 3 a.m, pacing around in circles, pacing, and I didn't know what it was at the time. I was having a panic attack.
Oh, wow.
I had a full panic attack and I was like, well, I'm out in the fucking middle of nowhere. I want my mummy.
God, it doesn't help that you've drained all of your energy and probably...
Well, you're exhausted by that stage. By the time you hit the Nullarbor, you're absolutely cooked. You've got saddle sores, your knees hurt. And so I've taken a heap of drugs for Nurofen and stuff for my swollen knees. And we're racing. We're not riding across Australia here. We're racing. So we're doing 300 Ks a day.
One thing that's interesting, so you've had the Navy thing, which I want to know more about, but you've done CrossFit, you've done cycling. One thing that I always talk to Tommy with is I've never had like heaps of guy friends. I've never been, like Tommy could say, mate, I'm going to have a night out with the boys. If I say I have a night out with the boys, I don't know who I'd call type of thing. Now I could potentially borrow some of Tommy's mates.
You go for a girls' night out?
Yeah, exactly, just a sort of casual.
No, what about that? No, Josh, you had that night at your house watching Victoria's Secret with the girls.
Yeah, that's true. I did have that sort of the Sex and the City type of stuff. Do you think there is an appeal to those sort of, you know, guy communities? Like what tell me what it's like
in the cycling world.
No, what I'm saying is the pattern of, like, you've got the Navy, you've got CrossFit, you've got cycling. Like, you are probably the blokiest bloke I've ever met.
You go that far. But
he was doing a one-arm push-up as he said that.
The blokiest bloke I've ever met with shaved legs. Because Derek is pretty blokey.
Yeah,
exactly.
I reckon you've had maybe a couple of more blokier blokes on your show, I reckon. Yeah, there's a couple of fitness dudes.
Actually, Jeff Jowett that we had on.
Jeff Jowett was definitely manly.
I want to have a stab at answering this. There's a push, and I watched a psychologist talk about this, where women are known to be talkers. They talk through their emotions with their girlfriends, and it's almost like a bit of therapy for them. And there's a push for men to talk more. And while I think there's definitely room for men to be talking more, he was saying that it's primitive to, like back in the day, that the men would go out hunting, and it would be their time spent together that is this cathartic release. And I even feel like, for me, going to the gym, I've got my mate that I go to the gym with, we talk, we exert energy, and
just
I do
hunting
feel,
on Beach Road.
Yeah, we're hunting on Beach Road. But coming together with a pack of blokes and doing something active...
That was the time I could say, woof, woof. I've got a catch cry of the Daily Talk Show, which is woof, woof.
Is the equivalent of going out hunting back in the day and exerting the energy.
Yeah, and I think it's a high-achieving thing too. So, you know, the cycling thing, you're always, you know, you're using your mates to push to that next level of fitness, you know?
Mm.
And without your mates, you don't really have motivation to kick someone's ass, right?
Yeah.
And the same goes with CrossFit. You know, if you go to CrossFit class and there's some dude lifting 110 kilos and you're deadlifting 100, it's like, fuck this, I'm going to fucking lift 110 kilos next week.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it's that constantly pushing you to the next level. And I think if you're that sort of person, you always want to surround yourself with people who are doing great things. And hence why I've sort of always sort of hung out with better riders than me in cycling, and I've always sort of gone to the good CrossFit gym where I can learn. And so
how much of your motivation is internally driven versus externally driven, and has it changed as you've gotten older? So how much is it trying to beat your personal best versus the guy next to you?
I think when I was single, so 10 years ago, it was all externally driven, right? You know, it was like all about having the good rig and so I can pick up the chicks and stuff. Now it's more internally driven, you know, where I just want to do well and I just want to sort of hit the next PB. That's all come to a bit of a halt, though, with the recent birth of our little boy, Jack. You know, sort of he's been the focus.
Shakes and, shit up, doesn't it?
And that's interesting. That's an interesting concept, because that change from, you know, look at me, for example, you know, Navy, cycling, CrossFit, YouTube, trying to get a big YouTube channel. I mean, I've always sort of strived to do something. And now I've got this, you know, this little dependent, this little human that I'm looking after. Everything's gone by the wayside. Mm.
What's the biggest change for you?
Well, I think, you know, particularly for me, the focus on Jack rather than myself, which has been tough, to be honest with you. Been tough. I'm one of the 10 that gets postnatal depression and anxiety. So one in 10 men have postpartum?
And I'm
one of them.
What did that look like?
Yeah, what is it?
Well,
yeah,
so for the last 8 weeks, I've had severe anxiety and a little bit of depression. I haven't felt depressed, but definitely severe anxiety coming and going. And it's been diagnosed as postpartum.
I think I said to you, Josh, it's the closest I've felt to being depressed was after I had the baby.
Well, it's a big shift. That's
it's a massive shift. And I think what we put it down to, the doctor said, you know, with YouTube, I was focusing on YouTube. I was, you know, doing the best that I could do with YouTube, putting out videos almost daily, cycling and you know, all these other things. And all of a sudden, bang, none of that.
Yeah.
Getting fat, because I've put on like 15 kilos and since my cycling days.
Yeah.
And now I'm looking after little bub and sort of at his beck and call all through the night.
What's the what's the internal monologue that you're having in your head about it all?
Look, you have to say, especially going through, as I say, there's a lot of people that really struggle after having a baby. And I think what you've got to remind yourself constantly is that this is the next awesome thing.
Yeah.
Having this little human and being a good example. And, you know, like I can always show Jack and we can reflect back on what I've done on YouTube and stuff like that. And I'm not bloody PewDiePie with 56 million bloody subscribers, but I've done something pretty awesome that I can be proud of.
Mm.
And but I think you've got to always remind yourself that, you know, your little man or your little bubba is the next cool little project.
Well, almost the internal dialogue goes, because survival mode kicks in, because that's essentially what's happening.
Yeah.
This is thrusted into a life that wasn't what you previously knew, and into this world of like, it's, did you feel a shift internally, like a primitively, like a switch turn to look after a baby? Like, was it just automatically for
you? For me, the first few weeks, it was a traumatic birth with Hannah. So she went 26 hours at Royal Women's, and they were fantastic Royal Women's, but 26 hours, the baby was sort of on his side and he had his head turned. So they had to do a cesarean, emergency cesarean, at 1 a.m. And that, for me, was one of the most traumatic things I've ever gone through in my life. And so I think there's a few things that sort of stem, they build up. But over the 8 weeks of looking after Jack, I was stoked. And then all of a sudden I started feeling tingling in my left arm and my left leg. And I was like, oh, this is weird. So I Googled the symptoms and multiple sclerosis came up.
Oh, no.
MS. And I thought I had MS. So I
don't
went into
Google
this panic.
Shit.
Yeah.
Yeah, I went into this full panic about that.
Dr. Google. No.
Dr. Google, man. Listen, my best advice to you guys, stay away from Dr. Google if you feel tingling and shit, right?
Yeah, not ideal.
At the end of the day, anxiety and stuff sort of builds up over time. Mm. And the doctor said, look, this is all just anxiety. I got checked out and everything was fine. But he said, you know, anxiety and stuff. And this is very, very common after you have a baby.
Have you, you were telling us before that you've gone from having how many coffees a day?
Oh, no, this is an interesting thing. I was saying to the boys, they rocked up and I was having a chamomile tea. And I used to have 5 strong lattes minimum a day. Like, and I spent so much money on, I could have bloody bought a house.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's you were living the Melbourne dream, weren't you? This is what we had to offer and you're taking full advantage of it.
5 coffees a day. And so, they were bloody good coffees.
Yeah. And so did you, was the, you getting off coffee and this new anxiety, was it linked at all? Did you decide to give it away because of that?
Yeah, I think my anxiety was there and it sort of bubbled over. Mm. And anyone who's experienced anxiety and panic attacks, it's the worst thing in the world. I was talking about seasickness earlier. Mm. It's much, much worse than seasickness. And so I stopped having the coffees and I stopped drinking alcohol. So I haven't had a beer or a coffee in 6 weeks.
Good on you.
Just so that I can try to get over this anxiety and sort of feel normal again. I haven't done drugs yet. I haven't gone on to like Zoloft or anything like that yet.
Mm.
But for the most part, I'm starting to feel better.
Have you kept up your cycling?
I've really picked up on the cycling and CrossFit. So I've been back in the gym CrossFit for 4 weeks now, socializing, back with the crew, trying to get the gut off, a little bit of cycling. It's harder with cycling because it's winter in Melbourne.
Oh, it's freezing.
It's horrendous. Yeah. Like, I got up this morning to go for a ride. It was 4 degrees. I went straight back to bed.
Even just driving, that's like in the morning at 4 degrees is hard, let alone like being outside of a car.
Just walking to the car in 4 degrees is
horrendous.
It's horrendous because then you got to wait 5 minutes for the heater to heat up.
Yeah, no, it's gross. And so do you, with, to give us a description of a panic attack from your end. What does it feel like?
So, okay, so how, as I said, it started because I thought I had MS, right? Mm-hmm. So I thought I had some neurological disease. And what happens is you think about your baby and think, okay, who's going to bloody pay the bills?
Mm.
So this is where the anxiety starts, right? And apparently this is very common because a lot of women who get postnatal, they think about a disease and they think, I can't look after my baby if I die. And I say, panic, right? And they go, but an anxiety, a panic attack is essentially a buildup in your body. It's very hard to describe, but you become completely foggy and you start thinking negative thoughts. Like, I was Googling, you know, Anthony Bourdain's suicide and just suicide things and just interest. And I found that really interesting at the time. Not that I would do it,
but
I was thinking these really negative thoughts.
Loop.
And I was in this negative loop and I was Googling the Holocaust and it was bizarre, man. It was the most bizarre thing. Like, now I feel fine and I'm like looking back at that and thinking that's weird.
Yeah.
But that's what happens with anxiety. It's a terrible, terrible thing and people get down and they get foggy and they lose clarity.
Can you see before the fog now? Have you gotten to that point of identifying when it's about to happen and change that loop?
Yeah. So I'm at a stage now where when I get a panic attack, like I had a bad day yesterday for no reason whatsoever.
I hope it wasn't because you knew you coming on the show
today.
No,
it wasn't, no. But I had a bad day yesterday where I felt really anxious.
Yeah.
And so, you start your breathing techniques and things like that just to calm yourself down. But it's basically a feeling of sense of doom is the best way to describe. You feel as though everything's coming to an end. And so now you've just got to breathe, take a few deep breaths in, sort of get, It's it's there's a lot of information online. If anyone is experiencing this,
so they should Google or they shouldn't Google.
Don't Google symptoms of MS, because then you just get crazy. But because it's a very, very rare disease, MS, particularly in men.
Yeah.
But definitely Google if you've got anxiety and stuff. It can't hurt you.
Mm.
Anxiety at the end of the day can't hurt you.
Yeah. Even but you can hurt you through anxiety.
But you
right?
can hurt you.
Yeah. So yeah. you probably need to. Be thinking about. I think that the interesting thing is, have you been much of a self-help book reader? Do you get into self-help books or anything like that?
Along with the writing, I can't really read. Yeah. I'm not bad. I don't mind a good read, actually, but I prefer a YouTube video. It's just so much easier.
No, absolutely.
Creativity for you, is it? Have you been flexing that muscle? Do you think that's had any contributing factors to feeling this way?
Definitely. I think the fact that I've backed off on the YouTube channel, I mean, I was banging out videos every day or every second day. And I think that creativity die-off has been a big problem. And, lack of training. I've got all this weight around my gut now. I got diagnosed with a bit of fatty liver, which is easy. Fatty liver is just something you just get back on the training bag when you get rid of
it.
How
do they diagnose fatty liver?
Oh, they do a blood test.
Okay.
They do a blood test and, yeah, I've got a little bit of fatty liver, which controls a lot of your hormones.
Mm.
So this could all be linked, fatty liver and depression and anxiety. And so, it's just a case of getting back on the bike and making my videos again, getting back on the bike, getting into the gym, which is what I'm doing.
Well, people think that, people would look at your success on YouTube. You know, it's not as big as PewDiePie, as you mentioned, but it's still very amazing that you've been able to achieve that. And they'd think, oh, that is where I want to get to. But then you see everything's relative as you sort of climbing. What do you look to as the next thing for you in terms of YouTube or?
Well, I want to start a big podcast. No, hey. No, I'm kidding. But yeah,
I'm not.
I watch you guys. I've actually listened to the podcast, your podcast, a while now, and I love it. And I think podcasting is a great medium because it's more advertiser friendly.
Mm.
YouTube, I'm enjoying YouTube, but I just don't think that's where it's going to be, particularly in the niche of cycling. So, you know, for example, if you pick a niche, if you're a coffee YouTuber, for example, you're only ever going to have X audience.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Whereas if you do something more generic, more generic channel, you know, you can grow to 5 million, you know, gaming, for example, you can grow to 5 million subscribers, you know. But the thing is with cycling, I don't ever think there's going to be that depth there. So I think doing a more generic, for me, a podcast or something like that where I can talk about anything, that's really where I'm looking at the moment.
Josh, maybe we say that the radio people are wanting to be YouTubers and YouTubers were wanting to be on TV. Maybe the thing is now the YouTubers are wanting to be podcasters.
Well, I think that like the top YouTubers are creating podcasts because they recognize that they can have a level of ownership of that listener base. They can. They're not having to worry about an algorithm. And they're able to sort of create their own path.
What about wiping aside anything to do with money or brand deals or anything? Do you contribute the success you've had with your channel to being really authentic in I just want to create and share?
Yeah, I think you've nailed it. I mean, one thing with my YouTube channel is I've always been just myself.
Mm.
I've never tried to be someone. I watch YouTubers who aren't themselves and I just think, dude,
Hard work.
Be yourself, man, because you can't do 1,000 videos and just pretend to be someone else.
Yeah. Well, my wife said from watching some of your videos together, she said, he seems like a lovely guy.
Oh, does she?
So there's a bit that's of nice feedback from the wife.
That's awesome.
Beats the Kickstarter comments.
Yeah,
for
beats
sure.
the Kickstarter
yeah,
comments
But
for
she
sure.
slagged off your wife.
I'll tell
that
her
was
that.
Her in the comments. No, I'm joking.
Yeah, so the from here with YouTube, do you feel like you need to be feeding it constantly? Is it like a kid? Do you have to worry about it?
It is. I mean, at the end of the day, I've started this thing. I've grown it to here. I've put a lot of work into it. I mean, 600 videos is, let's say, 4 to 6 hours per video. That's bloody thousand. That's, I don't know. I didn't do well at maths either, but that's a lot of hours, right?
A fuckload.
And so you think, I don't want to fucking just let this go and die, right? Mm. So my mindset right now is, okay, do I stay with the cycling? Do I stay with the cycling or do I change it to the Maven and then I can have you guys on and we can just talk shit about anything.
Yeah.
I will put cycling clothes on if you want us on anyway.
I'm happy to start riding again. But again, it's probably a bit
No, I like it. You know, because Josh and I are so in the video and strategy field for clients and all of this stuff. And it's nice to hear someone who isn't leading with, I'm a production expert.
Yeah, or, it's a different perspective.
This different perspective is to see what you think about the landscape of YouTube. And
I think the other interesting thing with what you're doing is what it reminds me of when I've been watching all your videos is it has the awesome bits of what community TV had like 15 years ago with higher production value, where it's like you can have... I remember I used to work on a show called Rodder's Life back about 15 years ago. And it was, you know, car people, and you would go to hot rod events and stuff like that, and the host would be recognized by everyone. He was sort of like this, you know, big figure within that local space. Has that sort of happened in an organic way? Has it been something that you've been deliberate in trying to create? What are the things that you do to try and to cement that?
Yeah, I mean, that's an interesting point, because definitely when you're in the niche, I mean, there's positives, as I said earlier, there's positives and negatives to being in a niche. So, you know, 45,000, 50,000, 70,000 subscribers is really where it's at for what I'm doing. You're never going to get 3 million subs, right? Yeah. But in terms of the community stuff, I rock up, you know, if I rock up to the Tour Down Under and I go to Wollunga Hill, and we're talking me here, right? Like I'm just a regular Joe walking down the street.
Yeah.
I've got people queuing up to take photos with me.
Isn't that funny?
It's the most bizarre thing ever. I ride up the hill at Wollunga and there's thousands of cyclists there and they're all Maven, you know, taking photos, running after me, stuff like this, and I feel like an absolute rock star. And then I come back to Melbourne and then I'm just a general punter.
punter.
It's actually been quite an interesting journey, and I think the key to maintaining your audience in that situation is to keep that community thing going. For example, I've got a Strava group. So occasionally I'll do a video where I'll go, oh, Joe Bloggs is kicking ass on the Strava group. So really
maybe one of my goals could be to be in the Strava group and maybe get a shout. What would I have to do?
You've actually
got to
do K's, bro.
Yeah, I'm happy to do some K's. I've only got a few days before I go away. Maybe I'll take the bike to Italy and do one of those big hills or whatever they're all talking about.
Good idea. Or run. We'll start with some running and I'll start up a little running group.
Yeah. I started off doing how often do you... Here's a bit of Strava etiquette. When do you put something on private versus public?
If your boss... So if you're in a job where you're not supposed to be riding during the day, put it on private.
It's a private job.
That's a private. It's Strava's one of those things where they know that people are going to be riding during, you know, work hours. So that's a great feature. And I used to use that feature a little bit. But I got to the stage where I was like, fuck it. You know, I do enough work for this company. Yeah. If I'm going to ride during work hours, then so be it. I'll do some night hours.
So what is your job now? You do something with surgery and...
So I've gone back to work. So as I said, I did the YouTube channel for a year. Mm-hmm. And then I went and I thought, what's the easiest way? Because it was a hard way to make money on YouTube, right?
What sort of revenue can you do? Like, because obviously you've got the $300 a month or whatever, but is it sort of, how do you break it down? Is it, you know, can you get $5,000 from a quad lock or something like that to sponsor you to do a thing? What are you talking?
Hey man, this whole area and even what you guys are doing with the podcast, if you ever wanted to get brand deals, it's such a new area that not a lot of people know what to do.
Yeah.
And you could talk to people about it and not a lot of people know. But I'll give an example. Like I was doing, you know, I might go to an event where I'll go to the Lake Taupo cycle event, and they'll pay me hypothetically, you know, $5,000 to $10,000 for me to be there, make say three videos. Mm-hmm. So you can make good chunks of money, as an influencer, right? And then so you're influencing obviously people to come and do the event next year, okay, through your videos, or you could do something where you're an approach on a brand and you say, look, if you sponsor me for 3 months. At $2,000 a month, I will have your product in my videos every day or every second day. I'll use your product every second day.
Yeah. So you were going to them saying that?
Yeah.
I think it's a good deal. I think that's I think that makes a lot of sense. Even with what Tommy and I are doing going into business together, there's going to be that element of we can make a good chunk of coin just being a production company. So how can we... And I guess that's the whole thing, is you're selling a skill as well. People need video content. So it's that whole thing of like, well, if they just pay for the content, it just so happens that you have an audience and there's that sort of residual audience, I think, is potentially exciting as well.
What's the numbers game if you were to throw it out there? Like, you ask 10 brands, you might get... One or 100 brands.
Well, just about every brand. See, this is the thing that I struggle with. I'm a salesman in my surgical device role, and always have sort of been. And then when I went into selling myself to these brands, I found that really hard.
Yeah.
And so you almost need to employ someone to do it for you, because I found it very hard to talk about me and how awesome I was to get money out of you. You know,
it's hard. I'm making a video at the moment about how I'm shit at selling myself.
Yeah.
And I look at the power in Josh and I and our partnership, where I can sell Josh.
Yeah.
And which is essentially selling us.
Which is what you've got to do.
But then he can sell me.
Yeah.
But there is an Australian thing of not standing up talking about how awesome you are and how much value you can bring, because people will be like, sit down, you fucking wanker.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And I mean, trying to explain to an old school marketing manager that... this is where it's at. This is the future. This is now. But you're somehow stuck in paying 10 grand for ads in magazines, cycling magazines that no one reads.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, you get to the stage where you become fatigued of bringing people up to 2018.
Well, you've gone early in some regards. Like, I think that even I look at the landscape, and I was listening to podcasts in 2005, and you know, before it was on iTunes, and you can get a bit sort of disenfranchised by the bullshit that is everyone talking about podcasts or YouTube, because you're like, bro, this has happened 4 times. Like, when Serial came out and everyone was talking about podcasting, and you sort of, your eyes get sore from eye rolling. But I think that there's going to be a shift. It's way longer. What I've discovered is, it's like, I remember, you know, 10 years, I've got a photo from 2005 or a beginning of 2006, where I built, I was in year 10, I was 16 years old, and I built a website on podcasting. I spelled POD-casting, and I was saying like how this was the new thing that was, you know, the big thing that was going to change everything. And it may have that impact, but things take so much longer, because there are magazines, there are people who are employed to make sure that the oil is being added to that same.
Well, it's legacy marketing, right? Yeah. That's the TV, radio, print.
But it's going to change.
Yeah.
It's
and people are, you know, they're stuck. You know, marketing managers for these big companies that have got money, they're stuck in this. You know, they just want to come to work every day and then go home at night and see their kids and stuff. So they don't want to sort of understand these new, and it's happening, it's all happening so quick. So I, you know, part of the thing that I was saying earlier, you asked me 1 in 10, mate, I found that most people I spoke to were keen to hand over their money, right, and collaborate on some sort of brand deal. However, it was the ones that were stuck, you know, the older crew, the marketing managers that were sort of stuck with the magazines, and they still feel that people are buying these magazines, these cycling magazines.
Yeah, feelings aren't facts. Numbers from Facebook and online platforms are facts.
Yeah, it's interesting. Yeah, it's interesting that that whole shift. And so I think that going generic is interesting, because it's, I think that what we're trying to do with the Daily Talk Show is, it's the niche is us. The niche is our perspective, our lens, and that gives us the opportunity to... It's still a niche in some regards, right? So it's almost like, I think that the biggest thing that Tommy and I have learnt is people can do most things that we can do as well. They can, but they can't be us. So it's that thing of like leading with us. And it's even, you know, we were talking about... guests' names, right? So when we have a guest on the podcast, do we put their name first, or do we put in a subject? Like, what do we put with titles? I'm sure you've had the mindfuckery that is selecting titles for your videos.
And tags and stuff.
And how? And can you go too far into dissecting the shit out of everything?
Have you gone analytical?
I'm not huge analytical, because I believe that you've got to have a passion for what you do.
Yeah.
So that is, you're doing podcasting, you've got to love chatting to people.
Yeah.
And if you don't love doing this shit, like what you're doing right now, there's no point worrying about the analytics.
Yeah.
Right?
You couldn't do 100 episodes or even 10.
Yeah. I mean, I've done, as I said, 600 videos now. If I didn't like making videos, and so my thing is, why even bother looking at the stats? I don't give a shit.
Yeah.
And so I never look at the stats. I never look at the, unless someone from a marketing department asks me. But, you know, in line with what you were saying just then, you guys are it. Mm. You guys are the reason that your listeners download the podcast, right? And so they want to hear your take on it all. Mm. And so I think you've got on's irrelevant.
Yeah.
You know, they just hope that it's an interesting podcast.
Yeah. Well, I think that's the distinction, because there's default thinking, which is, okay, people are doing things a certain way. So it's like, people are hashtagging things a certain way, or they're captioning their videos this way, or they're putting the guest first and what. And the thing is that you have to ask why. And for us, the why is exactly that, which is like, it's not... we're not doing interviews. We're not a Tim Ferriss show. We're not like if we lead with having cycling maven as the number one thing, people are going to be really fucking disappointed, because they're like, you guys spoke
I'm not into
over
cycling.
No, because not only that, but when people, fans of you, listen, there's going to be a bunch of them that are like, these fuckers don't even know what that word you use, like the corner's turning.
What's
that?
Rolling turns.
Rolling turns.
Which had nothing to do with the corner.
It had nothing to do with the corner. But the cycling maven audience are going to be fucking spewing at what the shit that I've said.
But maybe they won't, because we connected with you and you shared some pretty personal shit
today.
I think
they know that, you know, you're fucking clueless, right? Because you went to Rafa. Rafa's great. Rafa's great.
If Rafa has money, they're great. But if they're not...
Let's face it, their clothing are the best on the market.
Mm-hmm.
There's a stigma with Rafa in that they're a bit pretentious, right? And so a lot of the people that go by there are dickheads, right?
Okay.
But for the most part, a lot of them are great.
So if I was to rebrand, if I was to have another crack at this and start getting some Ks on the Strava, join your group, do all that sort of thing, I need to, is it cleats?
Yeah, you need cleats. You need to be able to clip in. You need to shave your legs.
Because I was using just runners, which I think was losing a lot of pace.
Massive kudos drop there.
And I also
kook of the day.
You get anti-Strava kudos for the runners.
You're like a surfer wearing the leg strap on your arm.
Not only that, but when I first bought the bike from Haim, I didn't know how the gears worked.
Yeah.
So I was... just riding in this crazy, like the cadence.
Spinning.
I was spinning a lot and not going very fast.
Yeah.
But slowly gotten...
You work it out over time. You'll get there.
Yeah. So what's the next thing for you, do you think? Like what's a week from now, 2 weeks from now, 3 weeks from now? It seems like this stuff is ever evolving. It's like fucking changing. Because the thing is, you talk about the Anthony Bourdain thing. It wasn't that fucking long ago that you're going through all of this shit, right?
Yeah.
So it's early days.
Well, you know, it is early days. For me, it's about getting my mental health back on track. So getting back into the cycling and the eating well and all that stuff. But I think also getting creative again. You know, getting back on YouTube, doing my videos. As I said, I want to move to more of a generic channel so that I can just talk about anything, because there's other things that interest me besides cycling.
Yeah.
And the other thing is, I saw just a little while ago that on Instagram, you know, these platforms, you said everything's, it's evolving and changing so much. There's this new thing on Instagram.
The IGTV.
The IGTV thing. And so there's something else that you can do, put my videos. And what sort of a platform is this going to be now? So
it's going to be interesting seeing you. I think I've spoken to you about this, Tommy. I think that transitioning from having a brand and changing is one of the hardest things that you can do, because everyone's going to say, you are the cycling maven. Get fucking back into your spot. Do your cycling. I remember I saw a guy who does the art of photography, and he normally does camera reviews. He decided to do a vlog, and it was like the world was ending. He got slammed.
Yeah.
I think he had to do an update, an apology video for having the audacity to do a fucking vlog.
Yeah, and this is the thing with vlogging, you know. Like for the most part, most of my videos are vlogs.
Mm.
And for those of you that don't know what a vlog is, it's, you know, you hold the camera, you talk a bit of shit to the camera, you tell a story of your day, essentially. That's what you're trying to do.
Yeah.
And you're just trying to keep the audience engaged for the full 10 minutes of the video, which I roughly aim for 10 minutes. Most people, incidentally, drop out at about 6 minutes.
Yeah, interesting.
I do look at some stats.
Yeah.
But you know, vlogging, it's a funny thing. So now that I've got the kid, do I show my baby? Do I show my baby's face? You know, when you've got a child, it sort of changes the game a bit. And so I've got this reluctance to continually bring this camera in and show my audience my life.
I did see your baby. Very cute.
Very cute baby. Yeah, thanks, bro. Yeah,
mate, beautiful. Yeah, he is cutie. But yeah, it's ever evolving. It'd be good to see what you're doing, and that's why we want you to come back on at some point. Yeah.
Well, you're the friend of the show now, and I think that's the difference with what we're doing too. Is it's not like this isn't this once-off guest type of shtick. It's about like having people on regularly when you've, you know, got your new thing and you've removed cycling from your brand name. It's the new you. You can come on.
But until then, we'll have you on as the cycling expert.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah.
Or whatever you want to call yourself, exactly. We'll take it.
The Gaz Man.
The Gaz Man. Just call me Gaz. That's my new name. Gaz Maven. Gaz Maven.
Mark, thanks for coming on. That was awesome. It's the Daily Talk Show, everyone. Send us emails too, especially if you have questions for Maven. We'll just call you fucking Maven now. Hi@thedailytalkshow.com as well. We have stickers too, which we're really excited about.
Yeah,
you can put them on your bike. Is that a faux pas? Can you not put stickers on your bike?
You can put them on your bike.
Okay,
yeah,
great.
All right.
Yeah, so
I've actually got one for you.
Yeah, we've got this is a big deal. I did the math though. They cost us about 10 cents each.
I think that's
to make
my jacket, bro.
This is a disaster. Anyway, we'll do that off air. It's the Daily Talk Show, everyone.
See you guys.
Have a good one.
Thanks for having me.